Welcome to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network, here live every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. This is Daryl.
And Ian.
And Ian is currently sitting in. The regular co-host, Amberly, is apparently stuck in traffic. She's on her way. And until she gets here, Ian, I wanted to talk to you about the situation in Palmer, Mass. On Thursday.
Oh, yes.
Me, you, and one other guy from Keene, David, yep. drove down to Palmer to show support for a friend of ours whose house was stolen by the town, and it was scheduled to go up for what they called a tax auction, which basically is where they try to sell off all of the stolen property and get some of the money that they believe they are owed.
Right. In this case, something like $36,000.
Yes. And Joseph J. Noon is the gentleman whose house was stolen. He actually had a land patent on the property and said that, you know, he owns no real estate. Personal property can't be taxed in Massachusetts, but real estate can be. They claim that he owed real estate taxes. And he tried to argue, wait, no, I have a land patent on this saying that it is personal property. It is not real estate. So,
yeah, I've heard about this land patent thing, you know, before I met Jay Noon. And I really like Jay. I think he's a heroic guy for being willing to put his property tax or his property on the line for what he believes. I just don't know if I think that the government people care about the land patent.
Right. Well, his question that went unanswered was, if this is personal property, at what point did it become real estate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question that they were never able to answer.
Sure. Well, I mean, the IRS also is notorious for not answering simple questions about, you know, how is an obligation created for me to pay this tax, which is another question you can ask about the property tax. If I owe this tax, how did that obligation come about? Can you walk me through the steps? How is it that electing somebody to political office creates an obligation to everyone else in a geographic area to pay that person's ridiculous programs, to pay for them?
Right. So we went down and there was a protest outside of the open house Yes. where the property was. And there were armed police officers.
They had their zip ties, too.
Had the zip ties.
They're ready for a crowd.
Weapons. I believe they were also wearing Kevlar vest. One of Jay's friends is some kind of a security guard or military police officer, and he was saying that they're wearing their tactical gear. I'm not sure what makes it tactical. I'm just going based off of what he said. So they were wearing, you know, tactical gear and had zip ties. They had cones set up. And once Jay arrived, they said, Jay, there's your protest area. He stood in there
for maybe 15 minutes. Yeah, he actually did go in there, but nobody else did.
For about 15 minutes. I joined him for maybe 2 minutes just to talk to him and look at some of the papers that he had. And for the most part of the roughly 90-minute open house, no one was in the protest area.
Right.
And nothing was done about it.
Yeah.
And then after the open house, in which Jay notified everybody that went in, if you buy this house, you'll be added to a federal lawsuit. This is stolen property. We went to town hall, and that's where things got interesting.
Sure enough. Amberly's joining us.
Yes, Amberly's now here.
Hey, everybody.
I'm sure you've read the articles or heard about the situation that we're
discussing. Yeah, this is kind of a nightmare situation this poor gentleman's found himself in. I don't know the gentleman personally, but...
you probably met him at Porkfest.
I might have met him at Porkfest, but this is a very sad situation that he's found himself in where his house has been stolen. And they set up a protest zone for him.
Yeah, a little penned off area. His front yard is not very big. The house is pretty much right up against the street, maybe 6 feet away from it. So in this little patch of maybe 6 foot by 10, 6x8 or something like that. They put cones up and they told us to go there.
If you go to the article that was written by, I forget the lady's name, reporter.
Lori Stabile from the Springfield Republican.
Yes, on masslive.com, if you just Google Ian Freeman, it comes up. If you look at the picture taken outside of the house, you will see David holding the sign that says tax sales are theft.
That's right.
There are two windows immediately above his head in the photo. If you just go straight down from those windows, you know, down the house or the wall of the house, that's where the protest zone is. And you will see that nobody is actually standing in the protest zone.
Yep.
So when we get to town hall, again, as I said, that's where things got interesting. They had another protest zone set up. A much larger one using wooden horses and orange cones.
They even had a spotlight in there. If you look at the video footage, they just like brought a spotlight out just to set down one more little placeholder in the line that they were creating. They just brought out whatever they could from the closet.
I did not notice that.
Yep.
I did not notice that. So we get there, and there are signs that were obviously printed off of a photocopier probably no more than 15 or 20 minutes before we got there,
mm-hmm.
and taped to the window that said, posted, no filming at town hall. Now, grammatically speaking, that means you are not able, according to what is posted on the sign, you can't point your camera at the building. So, Ian, who apparently didn't notice this grammatical error, neither did I at the time, decided, you know what, they don't want us to film inside, I'm going to film anyway. Daryl, hold my car keys and my wallet. And I said, thank you, because I don't really want to be stranded if you get arrested.
Well, if we really want to push that definition, I mean, if filming the town hall is filming at town hall, if you're inside it, you can't really avoid filming it, right? So technically that would cover that.
Well, it doesn't say no filming in town hall.
That's true. But if you're in town hall, you're still filming at town hall, aren't
right.
you?
Right. Yeah, you would be filming.
Possibly,
because
maybe.
You would be getting the inside part of town hall. So right. that would qualify. So semantically, you have lost.
It would be very
argument.
Difficult to okay. frame a shot.
I'm just saying, you know, grammatically speaking, you know, it doesn't say you can't film inside the building.
No, it's a good, it's a funny.
That is a good point, but, yeah. you know.
No, that would definitely not cause the case to be thrown out. But anyway, so Ian goes in with his camera rolling and asks one of the officers where the tax cell is. He says it's in here, but you need to shut off your camera.
Yeah.
And Ian said, no, I don't. I filmed in here before. And then he pointed to another sign that they posted inside that said, no, we have this piece of paper here.
Right.
And points to it and says, this says you can't film.
Yeah, I saw the video of you being arrested, yeah. Ian, and at the town hall. And I like how you brought up the Glick argument, but that they never even bothered to answer you or even acknowledge that the Supreme Court case had any significance on what they were doing.
Okay, so Ian, tell us about what happened after he said you can't film. You said, yes, I can.
Yeah, well, I mean, he pointed to his sign up in the nearby office window, and I said, you don't just get to print out a piece of paper and negate the freedom of the press. And then he proceeded to negate the freedom of the press shortly thereafter. I think I asked him one more time or twice more if he'd heard of the Glick decision. He told me to shut it off.
I believe you asked him at least two, if not three times.
And then I told him about it as he was walking me down the hall. So and this very same officer, Officer Tenzik, was one of the officers that we had encountered back in 2011 who we had recorded and asked him questions. He was giving us the silent treatment back then.
All right, so we'll get the rest of the story in the next segment about what happened in Palmer, Massachusetts after Ian was arrested trying to film a supposedly public auction in which all media was banned. We'll be right back on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values with Daryl,
Emberly,
and Ian. And Ian, you were telling us about the situation that happened down in Palmer, Massachusetts just a couple days ago, where you were actually arrested for attempting to film a supposedly public auction.
The auction was described in the auctioneer's PDF that they posted on their website. The Zikos Group was described as a very open public auction and professional. Very open, public, and professional. It was not open, and therefore it was not public. And whether or not it was professional, I don't know what the auctioneer standards are of the world, but this was ridiculous.
Yes. So you were actually charged with disorderly conduct.
Yes, twice.
Because they know that they couldn't get you for wiretapping.
Presumably, yes.
Well, because of the Glick decision, which came out of Massachusetts.
Right. So I'd asked the police officer, the boss there, Frederick, Robert Frederick, I'd asked him about why there was the discrepancy. Last time we were able to bring cameras into town hall, it was no problem. We were walking everywhere in town hall with cameras, you know, asking bureaucrats questions. There was no issue whatsoever. So what's the difference? You know, what happened? What changed? He says, well, we have a new legal opinion. So some town attorney or state attorney told them, hey, here's what you need to do. Here's disorderly conduct. You can't get them with wiretapping, but just hit them with disorderly conduct. We'll convict them. Be good to go.
Well, and it seems like disorderly conduct is the catch-all.
Sure.
For pretty much anything. Oh, you didn't, you know, step off of the sidewalk fast enough. You were chewing gum while you looked at me wrong. So disorderly conduct.
They're claiming that I was disrupting the proceedings of the auction, specifically the registering of people for the auction, which, of course, was not actually going on in the hallway. It was going on in the room, presumably. And so we weren't even in the same room as the people that were doing that. And if you watch the video, I don't really raise my voice until the moment when I'm being arrested.
Right, when they take the camera out of your hand.
Right before
and you
he
can't
takes
see.
The camera.
Yeah, that's when you start to get a little more upset. But you kept your calm through the video.
Right.
I thought you were very respectful.
At no point was I shouting. Nope. Or
yeah. The only ones that were getting agitated or visibly upset were the police officers.
Yeah.
Because you didn't do what I told you to do.
Exactly.
And you sat in the jail cell for what, roughly 3 hours?
Well, you know, I was in and out of a couple different cells. So first there was processing. So when I got arrested, you know, the inevitable questioning phase. Are you suicidal? Are you thinking about killing yourself right now? Are you high? These sorts of questions.
Wow.
So after going through I probably went through an hour of processing and then was put into a cell for an hour in town hall. Was removed from the cell, taken to the courthouse. And then put in another cell in the catacombs of the courthouse where I waited for a while, talked to a probation officer. She filled out some form. Of course, a lot of the forms have the same questions that they all ask you because they don't share information. You know, it's essentially a system that's stuck in the early part of the
20th
rank, century.
Serial number sort of things.
Yeah.
And of course, if you don't answer the questions, then they just deny you bail and you'll be sitting in jail. So ended up in the courtroom after that. So yeah, in and out of cells.
Okay, and then in court, I noticed something really unusual. Before asking, you know, do you understand these charges, they asked, how old are you, and what is your highest level of education?
Yeah, that was new. I mean, it was new to me. It probably happens all the time in there. Massachusetts is a different system. There are things that are very different about it from New Hampshire. Like,
you don't plead guilty, you take responsibility.
At least for town ordinance, I don't know if that was the case for the misdemeanor. It may have been a not guilty or guilty for the misdemeanor. And there is only one misdemeanor category. It's not a Class A, Class B thing like it is here. So it's, you know, it is a different system. And at one point I was talking with a prosecutor and she was, you know, offering a plea deal and she talked about what she was offering there. And that was confusing because I hadn't quite heard the terminology before. But I offered, you know, in return, well, why don't you just suspend the fine? She's like, what?
I don't understand what that means.
Right. She didn't have any concept, even though she lives, you know, an hour and a half south of New Hampshire's legal system.
Wow.
You know, what was going on up here?
So they don't, they obviously do not share information between the states unless you're talking about like a criminal who is crossing state lines committing crimes in both states.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I recall you asked or said something to the judge about, you know, give me a fine but suspend it on good behavior. And she said, well, how will I know if you behave yourself?
Right, because I wouldn't be around, living around there. And she had a good point. So I just suggested she put it on file, and she refused. She wanted to get $50. And so I said, you know what? I'm not going to be taking a plea.
Well,
let's
go to
trial.
You actually asked if you could donate that to charity.
Thank you, yes. And she refused that.
And she refused and then immediately set a court date.
Yep.
Wow.
She was like, nope, this is not negotiation time. I'll see you in December.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ian, at least she, you know, if you were under the age of 18 in Virginia, when my son went to court, the judge told me that because we live in New Hampshire, that if my son did not listen to me or if he did anything wrong here in New Hampshire, that I was to call the judge immediately and tell her.
Oh
yeah,
he was a naughty boy.
So because
you need the judge to help you with your parenting.
You should have seen the look I gave her. It was a. I'm glad she was looking away.
He was a naughty boy. He didn't take out the trash today like I asked him to.
Right. So I wonder how many parents actually turn their kids in when they don't listen, or like you said, don't take out the trash when they're supposed to. I thought that was.
It's probably a shocking amount of people.
A lot.
The police state-ish. A lot, actually. So at least you didn't have them telling you, hey, we're going to get your friends to tell us if you've been bad, Ian. So don't be bad in front of your friends.
And then after we were done at the court where they set the court date of or the pretrial date.
Right, which I'm going to motion to jump past that.
We went back to the police station for you to try to get your property back.
Okay, so the Palmer police, they did the wrong thing by arresting a member of the media or arresting anybody for recording video in a public place. But I got to give them credit where credit's due. I mean, they didn't have to give me my camera back. They didn't have to give me my cell phone back. They didn't have to give me the SD cards back. But I managed to, negotiate that they would copy the information they needed right there and then, and I got my camera and all the SD cards and the cell phone back. So Robert Frederick, you know, kudos to him. He didn't have to do that, you know, and he didn't have to let me have my water bottle in the cell with me. That was a violation of some kind of, you know, standards. Could have cut myself with it or something like that. And so, you know, there was a couple things they did that
maybe
they didn't
have
to do.
Maybe there was acid mixed in with the water. That's what they were afraid of.
Well, you know,
they
did
don't
check
want
it.
You on drugs and then right. giving drugs to the other inmates yeah. that weren't there.
Because I came there with a bottle full of LSD with the expectation I was going to get arrested.
Yeah.
Well, Ian,
no,
don't
he did
you
check the bottle though and sniffed it. Before.
Don't you expect to get arrested every time you walk out your door?
Right? Maybe I should.
Yeah. If you can hang on okay. for just one more segment, I
it's really
have
not
a
that
couple
funny,
of extra
but
questions sure. for you. We'll be right back on Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. Welcome back to Voluntary Values with Daryl, Emberly, and Ian. And Ian has joined us in studio to discuss the goings-on and corruption in Palmer, Massachusetts, where he was arrested for a violation called, what was that again?
Disorderly conduct.
I almost said contempt of cop, and I know that that's not actually what it's called. So, violation... Town violation, disorderly conduct.
And a misdemeanor.
You didn't do what we said fast
That's
enough.
Right.
And
unfortunately, the first disorderly conduct misdemeanor charge you get in Massachusetts does not carry a jail time possibility. The second one does, but the first one does not. And so therefore, I do not have a chance at a jury trial.
And you were actually pleading your case before the judge in which you said, you know, they had no right to do this. And the judge basically said, Well, the Supreme Court has ruled that even if you're being illegally arrested, you cannot resist.
Right, and I said I wasn't charged with resisting arrest.
And she said, well, just do whatever they tell you and then file a grievance.
Right, because that works really well for you here in Keene, where the people came into your bedroom, woke you up, the government bureaucrats yes. here in Keene. You filed a lawsuit against them,
yes.
which, of course, if you file a grievance, won't do anything. You filed a lawsuit, they kicked that thing out of court, and now you're possibly going to be forced to pay attorney's fees.
Yes, although my understanding is that unless their lawyer actually files a written motion requesting lawyer fees,
yeah.
then the judge does not have to issue a ruling on that.
And I think you might be right about that.
All motions apparently have to be ruled on in some manner within 10 days of them being made, if it's
I believe
the
that's
day
true.
Of the trial.
I think there's a 10-day rule on motions, but I'm not positive.
So, you know, he made the verbal motion the day of.
Yep.
And
it's been a couple weeks now.
It's been 10 days, and I've not heard anything. So, yeah, just the whole thing of do what we say and then
even if what we're
make
saying,
a complaint later.
Yeah, even if what we're saying is patently illegal and unconstitutional, do it anyway, and then register, what, a complaint form with the police department?
Yeah.
With what, the city clerk's office? I mean, what? What do you do there?
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if there's a way to do a citizen's arrest of police officers who illegally arrest people.
Good luck.
Citizen's arrest, you just kidnapped my friend because he did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could set up like a citizens arrest group and just go out like you're the citizens policing the police. I mean, what a lot like what Cop Block does, but a little maybe more instead of just watching the watchers.
Well, it would be ridiculous to try that because what are you going to do? Touch the cop? Then you get an assault charge.
That's very true, because if you just touch a police officer, they can charge you with assault.
Well, my understanding of British law, which is not very extensive, but apparently under the Magna Carta in the United Kingdom, you can actually do a citizen's arrest of government officials. And there's a video mm-hmm. online from a couple of years ago where people went and did a citizen's arrest of a corrupt judge.
Hmm.
So, yeah, just the whole thing of do what we tell you, even if it's something that you know to be illegal. Or something that you know the cop does not have the authority to ask you to do. So, you know, and the analogy that I gave on the ride home with the one person that was in the car said, what does that mean? I said, well, basically, if the cop pulls you over and says, give me a blowjob or you're getting arrested.
Right. You can file a
complaint. Give the cop a blowjob and then file a grievance.
Right.
Ugh. I think in that instance, I'd rather just be arrested.
Well, that's how I feel. I mean,
right.
I don't.
You know,
I just don't like to back down. I mean, rights mean something to me. So when somebody's violating my rights, well, I'm not going to just back down. That's why we're where we are today.
Exactly.
It's because people are such a bunch of pussies.
I would say that you're right on that one. And, you know, but I also say, Ian, that you have to be able to be comfortable with what you do. So if you're not comfortable being arrested all the time, don't be. But don't complain when other people.
Sure.
Know, who are comfortable with getting arrested for what they believe in, get arrested and support those people. But if you're not comfortable with it, don't complain that they do it.
Right.
Because I do hear a lot of people from outside of Keene complaining about what Keene people do. And I say to them, well, you know, why are you upset? You're not getting arrested. You're not the ones doing it. You're not the ones paying the fines.
Okay, so I've been dealing with this for years. It is the viewpoint that civil disobedience is bad for the liberty movement. That's what the viewpoint is. It's not necessarily that, oh, he got arrested. There's some sort of personal tragedy there. It's that it's bad for the movement.
All right, because civil disobedience never worked for Gandhi.
Well, they will say that this is different.
It's always different.
Yeah.
It's always different.
Right.
You know, just like when you say, in 1773... people were shooting by now. Not that I'm advocating violence, but just saying, you know, during the American Revolution, yep. the taxes were much lower.
Mm-hmm.
No, and they were fighting for the rights of Englishmen. The American Revolution did not start because they were fighting to become an independent nation. They wanted the rights of an Englishman that they felt that they were due. And then once they realized that that wasn't happening, then it became a fight for independence. But if you look back, you know, it was less than 5% of income that the people were having stolen from it. And it wasn't even in the form of income tax. It was, you know, excise taxes and tariffs and all these other sort of hidden sort of fees. And now, what, somewhere close to 60% of what you earn is stolen in one way or another, assuming that you yeah. file income taxes and give that to the federal government.
Right.
And not only that, but they're doing even more objectionable things. You know,
right.
Spying, snooping, even more murdering than, you know, the King George could have dreamed of.
Yeah, and I've heard you say numerous times on Free Talk Live that your property taxes are, what, 6 times higher here than they were in Florida?
No, 4 times.
Four, six, close enough.
Yeah,
that's still
huge.
Pretty high, yeah.
I pay more in taxes to live here in New Hampshire than I did in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, but one of the benefits of New Hampshire, no sales tax.
Yeah, but I never really bought that much stuff in Florida, you know, brand new necessarily, so sales tax didn't hit
me
very hard.
Well, you still bought groceries.
You weren't taxed on groceries.
Yeah, no taxation on groceries.
Okay, well, where I'm from in Alabama, they tax groceries.
Mm, yeah.
They tax clothing.
There was no state income tax in Florida either.
Right.
So, I don't regret moving up here. I mean, I love being around the community, and I hope that obviously eventually once we get enough liberty-minded people here, we'll be able to do something about those property taxes.
And I saw something not too long ago where they were putting out information on the census, and apparently New Hampshire is having a mass migration to where more people are leaving New Hampshire than are being born or moving to New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really good thing for the Free State Project. Because
depends who's leaving.
Well,
I see what you're saying.
No, I'm saying if it's the natives that are leaving, and then we get 20,000 liberty lovers to move here, and there's still more people leaving New Hampshire that are New Hampshire natives or that aren't members of the FSP, then you know, our percentage just goes that much higher.
Mm, this is true.
You know, because 20,000 out of 1.5 million isn't as high as the percentage of 20,000 out of a million.
Right.
Or even, you know, if the migration gets even worse or better, depending on your perspective, New Hampshire's population could wind up being that of Vermont.
I can't see that happening. I mean, New Hampshire's got a relatively good economy, and I don't think that you're going to see a mass exodus.
I don't know. Just statistically speaking, more people are leaving New Hampshire than are moving here. Ian, thanks for being
on. Thanks for having
me. Thanks,
and we'll
Ian.
Be back on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And Amberly.
And I think Ian is still
I don't care.
Kind of here.
I was sort of done, but I'm still here, so whatever.
This is the final segment of the first hour. And Amberly, you have a really interesting story from Clay County, Texas.
Yeah, for some reason, the story just clicked on something else and went to somewhere else. So
okay, I have it pulled up here. This is from rawstory.com, and the article states, can being an atheist in America get you killed?
Well, apparently.
If police in the small Texas town of Petrolia are to be believed, the answer is yes.
Right. So, officials in Clay County, Texas, revealed this week that human remains uncovered near the Oklahoma border last month were those of specialist Jose Ramirez, an El Centro, California native, who went missing from Fort Sill, Oklahoma, more than 7 years ago. A former friend of Ramirez's, 30-year-old Justin Green, was charged with the murder in February. It's always a friend, isn't it? You know,
it's never just some random guy.
It's rarely ever just random people who hurt other people. It's usually always someone you know, which is a fact that most people don't point out.
I think I've seen before. I believe it's somewhere near 80% of all murders are committed by someone that was known to the victim.
Right. Almost all child molestations, rapes, robberies even are people that you know, which is really incredibly sad. But three others, including Green's mother and sister, also faced charges related to helping clean up the crime scene and hide the body. And the story was carried earlier this week by the Associated Press. But one shocking detail in that story seemed to be overlooked in the AP's lead.
And for clarification, this article is from March of this year.
Right. So it is a little dated, but yeah, it's still a good story because
right,
you don't
no,
see a lot of stories.
Said earlier this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do apologize. Yes, I should have said earlier in the year. A criminal complaint against the group obtained by Raw Story on Thursday shows that Green's sister believes he killed Ramirez, quote, because Ramirez did not believe in God. It's still not clear exactly when Ramirez was killed, but Texas Ranger Marshall W. Thomas claimed in his report that officers detected blood at a rural home in Petrolia, Texas, after two individuals with knowledge of the crime came forward.
Because that's what Jesus would do.
Exactly. That's so funny because I have an aunt who is a fundamentalist Christian, but she is also the most hypocritical person I've ever met in my life. She's
typical.
One of the meanest, most hate-filled, spiteful people that I've ever met. So whenever she even looks like she's going to say something to me, I just look at her and say, what would Jesus do?
Yep.
Which completely infuriates her, but she doesn't know what to say after that.
Right.
She starts stuttering.
Certain. I don't know. Maybe I had like the nice guy version of the Bible. I don't know, but I always thought that that Jesus said, love your neighbors. And he even said, love your enemies.
He did. Jesus advocated for loving
everyone.
Everybody
thing that a lot of people that claim to be Christians do, they're not being very Christ-like.
Not at all.
Not at all. No, no.
They're hypocrites, so many of them. It's sad. And they're the reasons why people don't much care for Christianity, why it's in the decline as far as its popularity.
Yeah.
It's the Christians.
Yeah, and Gandhi was even quoted as saying one time, I like your Christ, but I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ.
Yeah. Well observed.
Yeah, that's a great observation to make because most Christians that I know, which is one of the reasons why I don't consider myself religious, because I see so many Christians advocating terrible things and saying terrible things to other people and not following in Christ's footsteps, who advocated for peace and love.
Well, and
turn the other cheek.
Most people that consider themselves to be conservative Christians have absolutely no problem with bombing the rest of the world.
Oh, that's very true. Very true.
Okay, so go on with the article.
Okay. So they discovered the soldier's body buried face down in a shallow grave with both of his legs sticking out of the ground, covered by a tire and random trash. Clay County Sheriff Kenny Lemons told the AP that Ramirez was likely murdered sometime in 2007, adding that he does not know why Ramirez was at that location, but that he was an acquaintance of Green's. Reached by Raw Story, the Clay County Sheriff's Office had not further commented on the case. It is also not yet clear if Ramirez really was an atheist or if that was the real reason for the killing. The two nameless tipsters told police that's what Green said to them to justify his actions and claimed that Ramirez had reached for a gun as well. It's possible the two had a separate disagreement leading up to the alleged murder. The criminal complaint adds that Green had described Ramirez as a, quote, hateful person who did not believe in the Christian deity figure. The police report claims that Green, his sister Brittany, and her friend Stephanie Heaston Quarrel allegedly worked together to hide the body and clean up the residency at the prompting of Green's mother, Terry.
Okay,
wow, we got a whole family involved in covering up this crime.
So not only do they have the entire family involved, but it says it's not clear if he actually killed him because he was an atheist or if the guy actually was an atheist, but that's the story you told. I'm sure he could come up with a better story. Like, he tried to rape my sister.
He might actually get away with it because, atheists are very much hated in lots of the country. I mean, there's a huge battle. This is out in Texas.
Okay. Clay County, Texas.
But in Florida, there's that atheist group.
Where the men
are
men and the sheep are scared.
That puts up, there's an atheist group that kind of likes to aggravate the Christians in Florida. And they put up billboards all over Florida that advocate for atheism, which I think is fine. You're allowed to do what you want and put up whatever messages that you want to put up. But they do take on the Christians quite a bit and debating with them about the right and wrongs of
belief
in God.
Except for when I came out as an atheist as a teenager, I was never one of those like macho flash atheists where they, you know, I don't get it. It's almost like they're evangelical atheists.
They're a little
weird.
Scary.
People that are, you know, I call them militant atheists.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, the super evangelical Christians, I would call them militant Christians.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
it's like they're trying
to
save
beat
people.
You over the head with their beliefs. And unless you say, yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with, not only I agree with you, but I agree with you as much as you agree with you. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to beat people over the head too. Yeah, there are some people that just will not leave you alone.
And there's also, I mean, because of those kind of blatant in-your-face atheists, there's a lot of mixed feelings and misunderstandings about, you know, who atheists really are. My son is an atheist, and when he told me that he decided to become an atheist, you know, I said, okay. I don't think a lot of parents react that way. And my aunt, who lived on the same property as us, when she found out, she almost lost her mind. And she told my son that he was going to hell and that I was the worst mother in the world because I, you know, accepted the fact that he decided to be an atheist. And so I started laughing at her and I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Hold him down and make him believe? How do I do that?
Well, you can't make someone believe anything.
Do I force feed the Bible down his throat? Should I shove the pages in?
Let me just clear up something. There are a lot of Christians that they're like, oh, you know, if you don't believe, then God's sending you to hell.
Right.
And then, you know, the whole hellfire, brimstone, blah, blah, blah. When Jesus spoke about... He didn't actually call it hell. He called it Gehenna, which is an actual place in Israel that is just a horrible, wretched place. It's where they would burn dead bodies.
Ooh.
So he was saying, you know, you will go to this horrible place, and it's like this other place that nobody wants to go to.
Right.
And, you know, another way to describe it is if you've spent your entire life not wanting to be near God, then it would be a much worse punishment to eternally spend your time near God.
Hmm.
You know, which that's what heaven is supposed to be, is, you know, eternity with God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you don't believe there is a God, then why would you be punished by you're forever going to be in my presence? That's a much worse punishment than just you're going somewhere that, you know, people don't really want to go.
Well, we didn't say that they were based on logic or reason or any of those fun things, you know, that actually require thought.
Oh, well, I guess I'm one of those people that believes in God and whatnot and actually still uses my brain.
I don't, I'm no longer an atheist. I left being an atheist about 5 years ago to become a pantheist or a panentheist. And I like that perspective. I don't believe in the daddy God, but so I do believe in God.
Did the atheist church make you pay some kind of, like, leaving fee?
Yeah, I was never a member of any kind of organization.
All right, so we'll
I'm really leaving now. See you guys.
We'll be back after the news here on Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. Welcome back to Voluntary Values with Daryl.
And Emberly.
And Emberly, you have something that you need to read, right?
I do. So let's go ahead and do that. All right. So professional. Have you heard about Taryn P. Lupo's new book, One Nation Under Blood?
All right. This time without chuckling.
Have you heard about Taryn P. Lupo's new book, One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. You can find it at any major online... He says realtors here, but it is retailers on Halloween.
All right, so when we have Taryn on at 4:30,
yes,
I will make sure to point out that he needs to have someone proofread his ad copy before sending it. And I joke. I like Taryn. He's a good guy. I've known him for several years. And I'm actually wearing some Taryn Lupo jewelry right now. He did not make this out of gold. I got it gold plated in exchange for a Gadsden flag.
Nice.
Yeah. The wonders of barter.
Taryn's great.
People always ask, where'd you get that from Lupo? What'd you do to get a gold piece from Taryn? Like, you must have got arrested for like some major civ diss or something, right? I'm like, it's silver. I got it gold plated. I was at a county fair in Missouri, and the booth immediately across from me, the guy owned a gold plating business.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, you know, what sort of stuff are you gold plating? He was like, well, right now, just quarters and anything I can get my hands on, basically to show people how it works. And I was like, what would you charge to do my necklace? He was like, let me have one of those flags, and then I'll do it next time somebody comes over and wants to see how the gold plating gets done. I said, all right, here you go. Here's a Gadsden flag and my necklace. Bring it back when you get done with it.
That's awesome that you could get that done. That's really, really cool.
Really cool. Unfortunately, that guy is now out of business. He was a really nice guy, though. I don't remember his name. Don't remember what the name of his business was, but he was a really nice guy, did good work. I'm happy. So, Emberly, during the news, we were discussing the opening ceremony that happened yesterday here in Keene for what they are calling the North Bridge, which is the pedestrian bridge going across 9, 10, and 12. And
the multi-million dollar...
The $2.3 million bridge.
To nowhere.
Actually, it doesn't go to nowhere. It goes into a field that then connects to a street that goes to... I don't know what the name of the shopping center is, where the Target and the Michaels...
Oh, okay. So, right over there by Route 9. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So it actually connects what used to be the Sears Plaza with that shopping center near the liquor store and the DMV. So they're hoping that, you know, they'll actually be able to connect the businesses and people can just ride bicycles or walk between the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it went to nowhere, and apparently it doesn't. So I'm mistaken on that, but still, it cost $2.3 million to build a bridge that basically bypasses people walking a quarter of a mile and using the crosswalk that goes up under the overpass on West Street.
So instead of promoting healthy lifestyles...
Well, they're doing that as well.
But they made it easier, so you don't have to walk a quarter mile out of your way to get to the crosswalk and then another quarter mile or whatever, wherever you're going.
Right.
Now you can shorten that quarter mile walk and just go across on this $2.3 million bridge.
Yes.
That obviously the people of Keene needed desperately, just like the Bearcat. I mean, people in Keene are so much better off with this bridge and the Bearcat. Together, they make the city of Keene worth living in.
I got this new smartphone a few days ago, and it's so pretty. Oh, it's so pretty and shiny, and it's still got the little plastic cover.
It'll be on there for another week.
Probably. And it has a camcorder. I've never had a camcorder in a phone before.
Nice.
So I took this thing, and I was live streaming the event on Bamboozer, which is a live stream website and
yeah,
went down with Garrett Ean.
Nice.
And James Cleveland.
Nice.
And Garrett had a professional microphone with audio recording. James had the camera that is used, that he uses for making a lot of videos when he goes out cop blocking, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Garrett was getting interviews. He interviewed some guy that says that he's with some rail to trail group, or the group that oversees all of the rail to trail stuff in New England.
Mm.
And he was bragging, I've overseen every rail to trail in 300 miles of here.
Okay.
He didn't say it in a redneck accent, but I just like using the redneck.
I told you should
accent.
Have given him a ribbon. He obviously wanted a ribbon for his efforts.
He did. And
the fact that he wasn't being acknowledged by the city of Keene for his efforts is very disappointing.
I believe they did mention him. They just didn't give him a speaking opportunity to say, I love you so much. And that's basically what most of the bureaucrats did was, oh, thank you, Mayor Lane, and thank you, Charlie Bass, and thank you, Ann Custer, and thank you, Molly Kelly. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I so wish that I was a Keene bureaucrat. And then I could have friends like Andy Bohannon.
Andy the dancing bureaucrat. He was there, by the way.
My favorite guy.
He was there. So in the midst of Garrett talking to this guy from whatever rail to trail or whatever it is, Garrett asked, how much of this was privately funded?
Oh, good question.
So we are going to do a trivia question.
Oh, boy.
We'll leave this open for about 3 minutes. The first caller to call us at 603-435-1105 that knows how much of the $2.3 million spent on the North Bridge, how much of that was privately funded?
Can I guess?
You can guess.
I'll give it the 3 minutes, and then if I'll wait until somebody calls in.
Okay.
So
I don't
call
know
in.
What we'll give as a prize.
Our eternal love and gratitude for listening to the show.
And we will send you an email personalized by Daryl and Emberly stating how much we love our listeners. So give us a call at 603-435-1105.
It might be worth something someday. You should hold on to that email.
I actually noticed the time right now. So we will give this until 4:20.
Nice. So you got 6 minutes.
It's 4:14 right now. We have commercials coming up in 2 minutes. So we'll give you until the end of that break, you know, the beginning of next segment. Give us a call with how much you believe, or give us the right answer. But, you know, you make your guess of how much was privately funded out of $2.3 million. And apparently, the city of Keene wound up having to pay $21,000 for the inspection.
Right. That's
where they found a bunch of the bolts weren't long enough.
Right. The bolts
welds,
weren't long enough.
Something.
Weld bolts, I think they were called, weren't long enough. And so it had to be, those all had to be replaced. So that ended up costing the city of Keene, which means the people of Keene and probably Cheshire County had to pay $21,000 to get this problem fixed that the people who contracted to build the bridge should have fixed.
Well, now the city is trying to get the state of New Hampshire to pay that $21,000.
Okay, so it's not bad enough that the people of Cheshire County and Keene have to pay for it, but now we're going to force everyone else in New Hampshire. So my poor behind in Peterborough and people in Manchester and Nashua are going to have to pay for this?
Yep.
I say no.
Well, you'll be interested to find out who else is paying for this bridge.
Wow.
And I'll tell you that in the next segment. So keep it tuned here to LRN.FM. This is Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values with Daryl.
And Emberly.
And unfortunately, we did not get a winner in
nobody called.
Guess how much private funding paid for the North Bridge here in Keene. And Emberly, you said that you had a guess.
Well, I am going to guess that $0 were spent by private funding?
You would be incorrect.
Yay!
There the was highlight actually, of my day. There was actually $100,000 of the $2.3 million.
Wow, that's a lot. Hey, but that is quite a bit, you know.
That's roughly 1/8.
Right, but had the city of Keene maybe asked more people for money, they might have gotten it privately funded. It is possible to do.
I am not sure how much of that actually came from the city of Keene.
Well, they probably got a lot of state or federal funding.
There
for that.
Was a lot. They said that it was mostly state and federal funding.
We should change our song to the cake song that's federal funding. They have a really funny tongue-in-cheek song called Federal Funding. It's very funny.
And one of the speakers, I forget which one, said, and thankfully, because of President Obama, we got some of that stimulus money, too.
Yay, President Obama.
And they were saying that apparently this bridge project has been in the works for 12 years.
Huh. 12.
12 years.
12 years. So in 12 years, they couldn't... They're assuming that they can't get public support private support to fund this. If the people of Keene really wanted it, it would be done.
Yes.
Because when the people want something done in an area, at least in all the areas I've ever lived in, if they do or do not want something, they will coalesce together and make it happen. And if it has to be done privately with private funds, they'll privately fund it. I mean, even if they ask people to just come out and they'll provide, maybe some wealthy person in the town will provide all the materials if the rest of the townspeople will come out and build the project.
Right. Well, so it's interesting that you mention that because most art museums are privately run.
Yes.
They do get some federal money, but the amount they get in grants is minuscule compared to what their
budget
is. Well,
I will say that I've worked for a nonprofit that dealt with children for 5 years, and I did fill out grant proposals, and most of that was federal money that came to us. So we depended for about 90% of our operating costs was on grants and subsidies from the federal government. And that's no way to run a nonprofit, in my opinion.
Right.
Nonprofits should be run. And then I found out some other things were going on. And so I eventually left the company because there was other hinky little things going on that I didn't like when I found out about it. Besides the fact that 90%, which they misrepresented in some of their literature, saying that, you know, that 90% of their funding came from private sources, so donations. So while I was out there asking people for their money, they're actually doing grants, getting more of their money from the federal government. It was disgusting, and there was a lot of hinky stuff going on there.
Yeah, well, PBS, you know, it's been in the news recently about PBS, and roughly it's only 1/8 of their budget actually comes from the federal government through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Right.
So, you know, I'm very certain that PBS would...
Then it really would be...
They would be able to make up that 12%.
Right. Then it really would be public broadcasting because the public would be supporting it voluntarily.
I would be willing to actually give PBS money.
Right.
If they did not receive federal monies.
Exactly. You know, NPR, I mean, it seems like every other month they're doing their drives for money.
Yes.
So, you know, if they say that they depend on, you know, supporters to make up the budget so that they can do all the programs that they have, that they can supply. But they get a lot of their money.
NPR, they get... They do get some federal money, but again, it's a minuscule amount.
So why don't they just do away with that part and have you can have people. There are lots of wealthy people that are willing to donate
because there are some people that think that if the federal government doesn't give that 12%, then their budget would never be met and they would have to fire everybody and Big Bird would die.
Oh, we don't want Big Bird to die.
I don't want Big Bird to die either. And I would give money. I will give $5 a month to PBS if the federal government stops giving money to PBS.
So there's your call out, PBS. Daryl says he'll give you $5 a month. And I'm sure that there are other people that will give you $5 a month or a dollar a month or whatever the case may be. There's lots of people that I mean, how many memories do you have of Sesame Street growing up?
A lot.
Me too. I mean, my kid does. You know, I'm sure that hopefully my grandchildren will.
Yeah, there are very few organizations that I donate to on a monthly basis. Antiwar.com is one of them.
Which is a good one.
And if PBS stops getting federal funding, I will add them to my list.
We should add LRN to our list of worthy things, causes to give our money to, though, as well. Because otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do what we do every Sunday from 3 to 5.
Yes, so, LRN is another one, and Downsize DC.
Yeah, that guy
does
a lot.
He does a lot of good work,
that guy. I still get his emails, and I like him.
And I'm sure you're aware, since you still get the emails, that he started up the Zero Aggression Project recently.
Yes, I did see
and
that.
And deny consent. And I think it's some type of a co-founder of both of those.
Yeah.
Because I am a donor.
Nice.
And I believe he still has it open up to where you can be a co-founder as well. So check out Downsize DC.
Yeah. Great organization.
Really great organization.
So we're expecting Taryn P. Lupo to be calling in shortly in about 3 minutes, maybe about 2.5 minutes.
I know what the P stands for.
Oh.
Patrick.
Oh, one of my favorite names.
And I'm sure anybody that's watched the Porkfest roast will know that people make jokes about Taryn because when he first really started getting involved in the Liberty movement, he actually went by the name Patrick.
Yeah.
And he was a chiropractor and sold vitamins. And now he's Taryn and he dresses like a pirate.
Unless you've seen his new profile picture, which is him all sexied out in a Star Trek uniform.
Okay. Taryn and sexy do not belong in the same sentence together.
Only if you're talking about...
Unless you include Ruby after the word sexy.
Oh, well, okay. I will sort of agree with that. Ruby, you are a beautiful lady.
And I love when she dresses in her pirate outfit.
Uh-oh, you have an admirer, Ruby.
She has a lot of admirers. And We'll join Taryn momentarily right after this brief timeout here on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And we are now joined on the telephone is Mr. Taryn Patrick Lupo. Taryn, how are you?
Good. I'm so impressed you know my middle name. It's like the FBI around here.
Are you on speakerphone, a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone. Do I have a bad connection?
It's better now.
It's not really bad. I just had to turn you up just to hear.
I'll bring it closer to my mouth.
That's what you say. You say to all the peoples.
I'm sure you've told Jamie Crane that several times.
Speaking of, Wheels Off Liberty.
I so set that up. Well, I've got some news about that, actually. It's kind of interesting. All right, so what we've kind of decided behind the scenes is, I don't know if you remember Brian Hagan. At Porkfest, he was the guy that pretended to be Alex Jones.
Yep.
He does like a shtick where he sounds just like Alex.
This
he
is Alex Jones.
It's so funny because every time he does it, I laugh. I mean, I cannot help it. He sounds just like him. Every time he does it, he
gets a lawsuit
more and more.
Sent to him by Alex.
I'm It's funny because I've gotten asked to be on all these shows to do an interview except Alex Jones, and I'm pretty sure that's why. Because half our bit on Wheels Off Liberty was just teasing Alex Jones. We really don't have anything else. Anyway, so he started a podcast kind of quietly called Fajita Fun Time. And so his food's his podcast is kind of about cheap food, he does some stunts where he'll buy, ghetto Pop-Tarts and eat them on air or whatever.
Ghetto Pop-Tarts?
It's pretty funny, the Toastums, the Pop-Tarts of the recession.
The off-brand from Family Dollar.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't eat Pop-Tarts.
I bought some really off-brand stuff from Family Dollar while living in the ghetto.
Daryl will eat it.
Daryl will eat anything that's processed as long as it's not, freshly grown vegetables. He steers away from the veggies.
I eat freshly grown cow.
Cow and other processed items.
I eat things that used to have a face.
Wait, we went out to dinner one night and Daryl gave me his, I asked him, I said, why did you get that vegetable? And he says, oh, I thought you really liked this, so I got it for you so that I could put it on your plate because I know how much you love vegetables.
Hey, it was included in the meal.
It was very sweet. A little unnecessary, but very sweet. As I rolled out of the restaurant after that, because I ate all the food.
All the vegetables. Oh, man. Yes. Daryl's all class. So what happened is Brian started doing these podcasts for Fajita Fun Time, and he's kind of been a Wheels Off Liberty fan for a while, and he started inviting the host to come on. So, 1 week Mike was on, then I was on last week, and I think Jamie's on coming up. And what we decided to do was kind of help him out and promote him to the Wheels Off Liberty audience. But he wants to keep bringing us back in rotation as different, guests a lot. So some of the Wheels Off Liberty hosts will be appearing on his show as a continual thing for a while. And but as far as a Wheels Off, I think Mike and Jamie really miss it, but they just can't seem to have the basic life skills to organize and run the one podcast. They simply cannot record a half hour a week because, they just can't. Actually, it was a real big production behind the scenes because Jamie is an audiophile, so he would it's kind of like a pedophile, but different. But he really is into music. And then he refused to put on any sort of crappy sounding thing. So we couldn't tape on the phone. We couldn't use Skype. We had to have three different locations, and we would all record into GarageBand or Audible, some sort of recording on a nice microphone. And then we would email him those, Dropbox these giant files to him, and then he would mix all three tracks together and make it so we sounded like we were all having one big conversation. And so to get a perfect quality sound. So we're recording, and at the same time I'm on the phone, so I know what they're talking about and listening.
Oh, okay. And I was wondering if just all three of you recorded random 10-minute rants.
That would have been amazing to weave it together.
Because that does seem like something that Wheels Off Liberty would do.
Yes, it does.
Well, apparently, and that is the same as it was not just the show that was Wheels Off. It was also the organization and planning because, I would get a call. It was so weird. We never really had a set night. So you wouldn't get okay, let's do it Tuesday night at 7. We would try that and it would never work. And so we would just get these random calls. Jamie would be up at 11 at night and give me a call. Hey, dude, we're going on in 5 minutes. It's like, what? I'm in bed. I've been asleep for an hour. What are you talking about? So it was so hard to get everybody to do it at the same time. So Jamie would mix these things, add sound in, make it nice. And so if you ever go back and listen to Wheels Off Liberty, I will say, is one of the best sounding qualities. It does not sound like we're making phone calls.
Right, it does not. It sounds like you're all in the room together.
Right, and that was the shtick, is people really thought we were all taping from the same place, because we would joke around that, Jamie's microphone was real phallic looking or whatever, and that was, and that he just that had his mouth on his microphone or whatever. And
but
so
Jamie's
really
microphone
we
actually was phallic looking. He had it custom built that way.
And it vibrated. And then
Will's off liberty is one thing that even if you guys were in the same room should never be live streamed via webcam.
Oh man,
well,
that would have added a great dimension to the show.
At Porkfest, we did a live show, and all we ended up doing was I think I threw out something like $200 of alcohol.
Yes, you did. I believe you did.
I threw out so many shots, like Jello shots. I bought all Delia shots and tossed them into the crowd.
That was Porkfest 2011, correct?
Yeah, this year since Jamie didn't show up, we did that. We did the Alex Jones bit that they were all COINTELPRO in the first place, and it was just to bring down the Liberty Movement. It was to dumb down the Liberty Movement.
Okay, so Taryn, we actually brought you on to talk about your book. One Nation Under Blood.
Yeah, your new
apparently,
book.
Apparently, I've not read it, but I'm guessing it's about a nation that has a collective period.
Yuck!
It's called Tampon Nation, yeah.
And there goes really voluntary nice. Values right down the toilet.
This is Will's off voluntary right values.
Where we talk about
it's
books and tampons.
Interview.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
interview.
I started actually reading the book, Taryn, but I have terrible eyesight when it comes to reading on computers. So I couldn't actually finish the book in time, but it
That's
grabbed
right.
me right from the very beginning. It's a really good, really great, catchy beginning. And, you know, when you start getting into the story, it gets really exciting. I don't want to give anything away because it's a great story and I haven't
quite we can talk about some of it, but
you know,
it's,
finished
it's
yet.
The situation, I feel like in the last couple of years I've gotten to be a much better writer. So I've worked hard at actually bringing my writing game up.
Right.
And I think it's my best book. Like, it works on a lot of different levels. For your fans that don't know what it is, it's basically a new technology comes out that lets old people heal themselves with young people's blood. And it causes kind of a huge generational war that old people start demanding the blood because they want to live longer and they you know, it's healing everything. And they use the government to take it away from the young people. So they start passing laws and making it part of their Medicare program. And blood, they pass a bill that makes blood a drug, classified as a drug. So you no longer right. own your own blood. The government regulates it and owns it. And, of course, anyone that's under 18 doesn't get to vote, and they get their blood taken from them. And so they are assigned like a selective service card, a selective blood service card, where they have to show up and make mandatory donations.
Hey, Taryn, hold your thought right there. Hold your thought.
Okay.
We've got a break coming up, and we'll continue on the other side with Taryn Lupo here on Voluntary Values. This is the final segment of Voluntary Values, or I guess we're calling this the Will's Off Voluntary Values episode, joined by Taryn P. Lupo, the author of books such as The Pirates of Savannah, The Hunt for Seamus's Booty, which I believe is an account of a weekend that Taryn had one time, Catch That Collie, which is something that Jamie Crane did over a drunken weekend, and now One Nation Under Blood. And Taryn, I was joking with Emberly earlier. She read your ad at the top of this hour for the book One Nation Under Blood, and apparently your book is available from Realtors.
Oh, yeah, realtors.com.
From all realtors across the nation.
Realty?
Yeah,
I noticed that typo when it came out. I hope you didn't read it that way.
Well, she started to, and then she was like, he's got realtors written down here. I guess that's supposed to be retailers. I told her, I said, I'm going to have to give Taryn a hard time about making sure that he gets a better proofreader.
I'm the worst about proofing, like, communications and stuff, or my Facebook post. Like, you know, my books, I try hard and I edit and all that, but, like, regular stuff, I'll tell you what, I switched over to a Mac about 2 years ago, and autocorrect is my nemesis. Like, I swear, it has its own mind. It replaces stuff, and it's highly amusing what it comes up with half the time. It's much funnier.
Okay.
But autocorrect is my nemesis.
Well, here's part of the problem. You're using a Mac.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I got tired of the PC because, like, I don't think I had a PC that never had a virus. It just was nothing but virus. It's much like going out with Jamie Crane. It was just always getting a virus. And
I've been using Linux for years, and I love it. It has a look and feel.
But I'm not smart enough for Linux. With Linux, you have to be smart, and you kind of have to write your own code. And I'm not really.
If you use Ubuntu, which is what I use, then it's idiot proof.
Okay, now you guys are in a realm of talking about things I don't understand. So can
this is Will's Off Tech Hour.
Can we bring it back to the things that Emberly knows about?
Go ahead. All right, we'll go back to the phallic-shaped microphone.
Yes, perfect.
She has one, by the way.
I do.
And if you're watching the webcam, you can see that.
I'm wondering why it vibrates all the time. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Why do you need a microphone that vibrates? I don't get it.
Well, you know, it just gives that extra good feeling.
Okay, so
Lord have mercy.
Taryn, you were telling us about... the book.
Right. Are we still doing an interview? My bad. Go ahead.
Yes. You were telling us about the book. And is this a dystopian future, or is this supposed to be present day?
It only takes place 6 years in the future, so it's not too far off. But I guess that qualifies as dystopian. The hardest thing about this book is I can't figure out how to classify it because it's – if you say sci-fi – it's sort of sci-fi, but it's really not. When someone says sci-fi, I expect, you know, lasers and spaceships, not a couple of years in the future.
Okay, so this is 6 years in the future, which would put it at 2018, which is only one year before the Silver Circle movie. So did you take into account that Silver Circle in 2019 does not have vampire grannies?
Well... the thing is you don't realize that this book is actually based on real technology. There are real studies that show that you can use young people's blood. There's something called Delta Factor to significantly increase the healing in an older person. The problem is the study came out and it was considered too fringe and weird, and people just wanted to kind of sweep it under the rug. But all of a sudden, right as my book's coming out, I see three articles last week about it. All of a sudden pop up.
Wow. Like,
how many of those came from InfoWars and Prison Planet?
No, like real, not crazy sites, like real sites. And what happened is someone is putting out a new study about it, and they found out they were using it in mice to significantly increase brain repair. So people's aging process where their neurons stop firing right, it somehow reverses it. And they haven't figured out why, but it's working. It's making old brains work better. And now, of course, in my book, I jack it way up. The new technology, a transfusion machine, allows people to completely, like, steal blood from a person and replace it with their own. So they're in the book, they have to be tied to the person they're milking for blood. So there's a scene where, you know, everybody's sitting in a room and all these little babies are sitting in there and they're just watching these babies scream while they're getting their blood. And so it's based on real technology. And in my book, what's scary about that book is I use real laws, I use real agencies, and only a little of that book is made up. About 80% of it's already in place and real. And when you get to the end and you find that out, it really scares the hell out of people. I get these letters that are like, wow, I had no idea any of this existed.
Now,
what
are the most valuable blood types? Do you take that into account?
Yes, because what happens is these kids start selling their own blood and they get disgustingly rich. And the ones that get rich are the ones that have the real rare kinds. The AB negative is the rarest. And so that's part of the factor. And then also part of it in the book is how young the kid is. Because the babies have the purest blood, and you don't need a lot. But it's really hard to get. You can't get a lot out of a baby compared to, like, someone at 17 or 18. You know, they're only getting paid just a little bit for their blood.
Okay, so I'm a 34-year-old male with AB positive blood. How much money could I get for my blood?
You've got no delta left. At pretty much 18, it's over. So you would be on the other side. You'd be paying some kid to give you his blood. You'd be the vampire.
You're assuming that I have money to spend on blood.
And that's part of this plot, is all of a sudden people don't. So what do? It's just
they
like
go
Medicare.
To the sperm bank.
No, they go to the government and make it a right. There's all these propaganda posters in my book that blood's your right, young blood. And so they make blood their right, the old people in the book. And it's, you know, obviously an allegorious to taxes, you know, where people expect the older people expect that. Yeah, your money is their right.
Yeah, the younger to pay Social Security taxes to take care of them, yeah.
They're right.
Yeah, it's their right.
And they don't even apologize about it. It's their right, you know, to your money and your work. It's their right. So this book kind of works on a lot of different levels like that. I hope that people see through that.
Now, are there prison camps, or in your book, are there still military bases all around the world?
What happens is the government's trying to keep it quiet. So what they're doing is they launch a huge war on immigration, and they start stealing the immigrants' kids that aren't supposed to be here.
Okay.
So they do this big propaganda war, and they start with the Mexicans, and then they take them to the
of
FEMA
course.
Camps and refit them, the FEMA camps, and make them like giant blood farms.
So in the
beginning of the book, all these children are disappearing that are the and everybody's applauding and clapping. Because they're saying, oh, yay, we're winning the war on immigration, and they're just stealing kids. They steal the kids and then just drop the parents over on across the border. And of course, you know, they just deny they have them. Like, oh, we don't know anything about it. And then they start going after kids. Of course, they need more and more kids through the book, so you'll see as it goes on that they start pulling a lot more moves to get kids. All of a sudden, they get CPS really involved, and everybody's kid's a problem child that the state needs to raise now. And,
right.
and, you know, the neighbors are encouraged and rewarded if they turn in bad parents. And so people start using the system to, you know, if you homeschool a kid or if you don't vaccinate or whatever, they use whatever they can get to say you're an unfit parent and take your kid away.
But why would you want unvaccinated blood?
Unvaccinated?
Well, because it's more pure.
Well, they always, in the book, they check blood that it's not pure. So the kids that have diseases and stuff are kind of screwed because they can't, as part of the deal is you can't heal another kid.
Yeah.
So, like, kid's blood doesn't work on kid's blood. You have to get to the point where you have no delta. And I'm getting way into this book. So you need to go read the book.
So this is just the first book in a series of books that are going to come out. This is part one?
This is it. Part one.
Fantastic.
And, hopefully.
How many
parts? It
depends
on how good. That's the thing. I could wrap it up in two, but it'll probably go to three depending on how. Like, the next book gets really dark and completely bananas.
Whoa.
So it's going to get a lot more hardcore.
Hey, for all of you out there, you can go to lupolit.com to check out Taryn's books. And you can get One Nation Under Blood in ebook format using Bitcoin for just $2.99 right now.
And it is available on Amazon, I guess, on Wednesday.
All major retailers on Wednesday the 31st.
No, actually, it's the day before Halloween. The 30th is... I'm